Good morning. Welcome to Prairie Unitarian Universalist Society. I am Sandy Ingham, Prairie's minister. Prairie tries to be both open-hearted and open-minded, and we do a pretty good job. We welcome people of every ethnic and religious background, whatever your color, your sexual orientation, your gender, your family structure. We welcome you, no matter what your age or your abilities or your inabilities. Sunday mornings, our services can be very different, so I always encourage new folks to attend more than one time. Sometimes services are done by me, sometimes by members of the congregation, and sometimes by people from outside the congregation. These then are the opening words, anonymous words. May we be reminded here of our highest aspirations and inspired to bring our gifts of love and service to the altar of to the altar of humanity. May we know once again that we are not isolated beings, but connected in mystery and miracle to the universe, to this community, and to each other. Flame of fire, spark of the universe that warmed our ancestral hearth, agent of life and death, symbol of truth and freedom, we strive to understand ourselves and our earthly home. I'd like to share just a little bit of things from Our Chosen Faith. Some of you may know that book. It's a collection of essays that John Buren's and Forrester Church put together. This first little reading I want to share with you, though, was written by Unitarian Universalist minister Judith Walker Riggs. She says, long, long ago, it seemed so simple. The universe was a three-storied apartment house with heaven on the top floor, full of gods and stars, earth in the middle, full of people and animals and plants, and hell in the basement, full of terrible and scary things. God had nothing else to do but sit up there watching us. We were the center of attention. We were his people. Then came Copernicus. He said that the sun did not move around the earth at all, but was a fixed star. He said it was the earth and us on it that did the moving, and worse, that the earth was just one of the planets that so moved, one among many, and not at the center of anything at all. In the last few decades, we have been entering a new vision, and this was written right at the end of the last century, so in the 1990s. We have been entering a new vision of the universe as radical and revolutionary as the Copernican changeover. And we still have not worked out what it all means, either in theology or in our view of what humanity is and what we ought to do with our lives. Forrester Church writes that about when he's telling a funny story about his son, who they always called Twig. I'm not going to tell you the funny story right now, but Forrester says that when Twig gets a little older, I'll introduce him to the Humanist Manifesto, because at age 10, Twig came up with something that sounded very, very Calvinist to Forrester Church and his wife, and this kid was raised in a Unitarian Universalist home. So Forrester Church says, when he gets a little older, I shall introduce Twig to the Humanist Manifesto. In 1933, a group of religious humanists, most from Chicago, and many of whom were Unitarian, together composed a brief document outlining the basic principles of humanism. It was not designed as an anti-religious statement, but as a testament to the religious spirit as it might best be expressed in our own time. The word humanism is blasphemy to many deeply religious people, even today. More than half a century after this document was composed. It suggests godlessness, sacrilege, and immorality. Yet the Humanist Manifesto is a profoundly spiritual document. And then finally this, Unitarian Universalists, the challenge has been put to us to explain what we believe, writes Unitarian Universalist minister Stephen Kendrick. Now, if any of you have tried to explain that to people who don't know anything about Unitarian Universalism, you can sympathize. Here's his response. Our congregations freely gather to live out a democratic faith. Every human being is holy and is called to the tasks and joys of love. We do not limit the truth of God, capital G, even to the word God, but live in openness and belief in human freedom and dignity. Our creed is kindness. We celebrate the gift of life and join in taking on the sufferings of this fragile world. We are this generation's bearers of an eternal message that truth must grow, enlarge, and move in creative freedom. And finally, revelation is not sealed, but is lived anew in every heart. You say you want it simpler, asked Stephen Kendrick. Try this. We join in celebrating one world, one people, one love, which is truth, capital T. It is a tall order, but our heritage inspires us, and our conscience compels us to do no less. Now, the words to that hymn that we sang just a few minutes ago, the hymn that I like to call the meditative hymn, that one I sometimes stick in the middle. In this case, number 93, to mercy, pity, peace, and love. The words by William Blake were written sometime between 1757 and 1827. In fact, I think we could probably say sometime after he was 20 years old or at least 10 years old. More than 100 years before the Humanist Manifesto, which was written in 1933, and yet here you have a completely humanist hymn with no mention of a deity. And that opening hymn, Oh, What a Piece of Work Are We, which I always transpose in my head to, Oh, What a Piece of Work We Are, it is fascinating also from a humanist perspective. I have avoided this hymn my entire ministerial career, which is getting kind of lengthy. I avoided it, well, because every time I read the title, I cracked up. But now that I have looked at the words carefully, I realize what a humanist song it is, and I'll bet I'll choose it again. Especially that third verse, which you might not remember, so here it is. But give us room to move and grow, but give our spirit play, and we can make a world of light out of the common clay. Out of the common clay. And there you have it, just in that one sentence, why I became a humanist and why I remain a humanist. Oops, I just gave away the end of the story. The punchline, too soon. However, I'm not the same humanist I was, About 40 years ago, when I first encountered this philosophy, this belief system, right over there at First Unitarian, I have had doubts about humanism recently and its validity for life in the 21st century. Have I had reservations about whether or not humanism is strong enough to be a force in this world as we know it right now in this century? Yes, I have. And my doubts and reservations about being a humanist can be at least partially explained by those two words that I used in the title, hubris and humility. Humility, according to the dictionary, is the quality or state of being humble, you know, one of those where you have to go back to the other definition, from Greek words meaning earth, humus, and I'm not sure how to say this other one, even though I was in Greece this summer, chame, which means on the ground. Humble, as an adjective, means not proud or haughty, not arrogant or assertive, unpretentious, offered in a spirit of deference. But as a verb, it means to destroy, this part I love, to destroy the power, independence, or prestige of, to make humble in spirit or manner. Hubris, you probably, most of you know what this word means. It's not a word that I hear very often. It means exaggerated pride or self-confidence, often resulting in retribution. Think Shakespeare. Before I say anything more about hubris and humility in relationship to humanism, we need to take a very brief, fast look at the history of humanism in general and within Unitarian Universalism in particular. This congregation, Prairie, prides itself on being a humanist congregation. How many of you would identify or describe yourself as a humanist? When the search committee interviewed me, I swear you guys asked me, it was a very good interview, by the way, but you must have asked me 10 times if I was a humanist. No, you didn't, but it seemed like you asked me a lot of times. And I know it was very important. What does it mean to be a humanist? And more precisely, what does it mean to be a humanist within Unitarian, within this context, the context of Unitarian Universalism? I have to go back to the dictionary just for a minute here for a definition of humanism. The first one is devotion to the humanities, to literary culture. The second part of that first definition is revival of classical letters, individualistic critical spirit and emphasis on secular concerns, characteristic of the Renaissance. You see how far back humanism goes. The second definition simply says humanitarianism. But the third one says a doctrine, attitude, or way of life centered on human interests or values, especially a philosophy that usually rejects supernaturalism. It doesn't say it always does, it just says it usually does. And stresses an individual's dignity and worth and capacity for self-realization through reason. Are you still with me? That sounds like something that could have come right out of our purposes and principles, that third definition. So how did we get here? How did we get here to humanism? In one sense, certainly, humanists and humanism have been around forever, even well before the Renaissance, and almost always going against the grain of the prevailing culture, especially in the religious sphere. Unitarian Universalist minister Jack Mendelsohn, some of you will have heard of Mendelsohn, in his still relevant book, Being Liberal in an Illiberal Age, highly recommend this book. Mendelsohn traces humanism back to 450 BCE, before the Common Era, when a man named Protagoras spoke out against that era's, as Mendelsohn calls it, unintelligible popular theology. There were just too many gods and goddesses for Protagoras. He said, as for the gods, I'm assuming he means goddesses too, I do not know whether they exist or not. Life is too short for such difficult inquiries. Humans are the measure of all things. I really like that quote. For this proclamation, and I suspect other transgressions, Protagoras was exiled from Greece, and when he was trying to find a place to be in Sicily, he apparently was lost at sea. His books were burned in the public square. But today, we consider him to be the pioneer humanist. And his definition of humanism remains the classical one. Faith, thought, and action are the domain and responsibility of the human, not the supernatural. How radical can you get in 450 BCE? So how do we get here? How do we get to being a predominantly humanist faith? And are we still here as a predominantly humanist faith within the Unitarian Universalist Association? I'm not really going to tackle that until next week. Over roughly the past 2.5 centuries, since before the Revolutionary War in this country, free-thinking people here in what became the United States, and many of whom became Unitarians or Universalists, they wrestled with these questions. What is the purpose of religion? What is the nature of God? Are humans responsible for what happens? For everything? Did God, if there was one, create and then depart, leaving us to figure it out? Of course, humanist thought is intertwined with this history of the free thinkers. The concept of God evolved from God as powerful being, male, of course, who gave rewards to those worthy of them and punished sinners. Good old Calvinist theology. Punished sinners harshly sometimes. That God whom many of us associate with the Old Testament God. But always, always there was pushback, we would call it now, from the free thinkers. And there is, after all, a lot of room for evolving thought here. The history of this evolution in the way we think about God and religion may seem irrelevant to you. It might even bore you, which is too bad, and to me, sad. I know that it is not always easy for us to grasp how difficult it was for people in the early years of our country, during the colonial period and the revolutionary era, to go against the grain of the established religions of the time. That's why so many of them came to this country. And I think we can safely say that this is not irrelevant, that it is still difficult to go against the grain of the so-called established religion in this country. Remember, we always have to use our imagination and our creativity when we're talking about historical events. And that's what makes history such an exciting subject. I used to tell my eighth graders that. Not sure I got through. Maybe it got through eventually. We have to imagine, envision what the context was in some other era, some other time period. On the Unitarian side of our history, William Ellery Channing, who has been called the most important figure in the history of American Unitarianism, even the father of American Unitarianism, he gave a sermon in 1819 in which he criticized John Calvin. You all know probably, or most of you know, that I grew up Presbyterian, and I swear I've spent a lot of my adult life trying to refute what I learned about Calvinism. Channing, in his sermon, questioned the doctrine of original sin. He maintained that the Bible was not infallible. It was not the literal word of God. The Trinity was irrational, said Channing. And Channing said he believed in the unity of God. This was just unbelievably radical for that time period. That sermon was published in a pamphlet. That's how people got their news then. You know, they didn't have tablets and stuff. And that pamphlet became the second most widely circulated pamphlet ever. You know what the first one was? Think Revolutionary Times. Thomas Paine, Common Sense. But I didn't know that Channing's was the second most widely disseminated and published. Well, sure enough, as if Channing's work weren't unsettling enough, not too long after he gave that sermon, the Transcendentalist movement took off and more people became aware of it. The Transcendentalist movement has been called the second controversy in our history. The first was our breaking away from the congregational churches, because we were all congregationalists when this country was starting, most of us were, and Channing was a lot responsible for that breaking away. So the second controversy is the Transcendentalist one. Here are these radical Unitarians. First, they have the audacity to say that the most important thing is our own self-realization, our self-improvement. Now come Transcendentalists and say, God is revealed through nature, and we do not necessarily need an intermediary, such as Jesus, to find our own way to the truth, capital T. You can see lots of foreshadowing here, hints, clues, well, of course, especially in hindsight, of the coming power and strength of humanism and how it will shake up the church establishment. I am talking about the Unitarians and the Universalists, those two church establishments. I would love to talk about John Haynes Holmes, but I think I'll do that next week. But just mentioning him brings us to World War I and how he was foreshadowing humanism. So I'm going to jump now to the third controversy in our history, the humanist movement of the early 20th century. The big three Unitarian ministers, they weren't big in stature, they were just big in importance. John Dietrich, Curtis Rees, and Charles Porter. We'll have a quiz next week. Dietrich was originally a minister in the Dutch Reformed Church, but he was defrocked by that denomination for being too modern and for denying the infallibility of the Bible and the deity of Christ. Dietrich said that by religion, I mean the knowledge of man. Of course, now I would, you know, say people, not man, and our duties toward each other. There is not a supernatural being who's going to intervene. The Humanist Manifesto, written in 1933, think about that. Think about what was happening in this country. We were deep into the Depression, and it was looking more and more as if some outside being, God, if you will, was not going to sweep in and solve the problem, that humans had to solve the problem. That was very important to the writing of the Humanist Manifesto. When I first read the Humanist Manifesto, and I should tell you that Curtis Rees, who was also one of the authors of the manifesto, said that everything is leading up to a world order. That will be the coming order, a world order, his words. And all I could think of this week was the Pope's visit. This is what people long for, is a world order where we all get along. It sounds so trite, but I don't know how any other way to put it, that we long for this, recognizing our interdependence. By 1967, and I'm not going to read you any of the 15, there are only 15 parts to the Humanist Manifesto, 15 declarations. It's a very short document. The first time I read it, I was astounded and in awe of it, and I still believe in it. I might get to some of them next week, but you can always look up things these days, right? Go to the web and look up Humanist Manifesto, and you can read all 15. They're brief for yourself. By 1967, many Unitarian Universalists were in agreement that the term God did not designate a tangible supernatural being. That's not even 50 years ago. That brings me to the 2000s and where we were by then. where we, I hope, have been more and more accepting of skeptics, of atheists, of agnostics, of the secular and religious humanists within our congregations. In 1983, Brad Greeley, a Unitarian Universalist minister, wrote a pamphlet, back to pamphlets, and I don't know if we have this one out there in our lobby or not. The title of the pamphlet is The Faith of an Atheist, wherein he says, one does not have to believe in a supreme being to find comfort, support, courage, and insight in a worship service. One does not have to affirm a belief in a deity to feel awe, inspiration, and mystery in life. One does not have to worship God to be able to lead a life motivated by the good, the true, and the beautiful. Forrester Church said at General Assembly in 2003, when people tell me proudly that they don't believe in God, I ask them to tell me a little bit about the God they don't believe in, for I probably don't believe in him either. God is not God's name. God is our name for that which is greater than all and yet present in each. So now that I've got us firmly into the 2000s, I'll tell you one last little story about the latest battles in our ongoing humanist theist debate, struggle, controversy. Not sure what word to put in there. So some would say that this is our fourth big controversy, and some would say it's just a continuing debate from the third controversy. At this point in time, in 2003, Bill Sinkford is president of the Unitarian Universalist Association. He said to a newspaper reporter, unfortunately, right before General Assembly that year, that perhaps our association should try to reverse its course away from what he called the language of reverence and begin to, I'm using his words here, name the holy. Big controversy. Was he saying that we should start using traditional language as an expectation of membership? No, he wasn't. But unfortunately, things, as they often do, got twisted by the media and, of course, always the rumor mills. And it was reported that Sinkford proposed adding the word God to our purposes and principles. And maybe he even wanted to make Unitarian Universalism more appealing to more mainstream people. But he didn't. He never said that. Eventually, the controversy died down, and Sinkford was able to better explain what he meant and where he might be trying to go with his own beliefs. But this whole incident was useful in drawing attention to how confused we often are about our identity. And boy, the elevator speech got really important. You know, we pretend that you're on an elevator, you pick which floor, and somebody gets on, and maybe you have a name tag on because you were at a convention that says Unitarian Universalism, and someone gets on the elevator with you and wants to know what that's all about, and you have to explain in the time it takes to go down in the elevator. Paul Raser, R-A-S-O-R. He is a contemporary theologian, but he's also a Unitarian Universalist. He thinks we need an identity, and I agree with him. Even though finding our center and being able to articulate some kind of identity is getting kind of close to having a creed, which of course is a big no-no, except for Evan Creed, who's one of our members. It's okay, Evan, you can stay. But I appreciate what Raser has come up with, what he calls three core values that might help us fill our identity void. And here they are: spiritual freedom, social justice. Third one is interdependence. I might have more to say about this next week. Anyway, we have our purposes and our principles. And that maybe is all that we need to describe who we are and what we believe. Or more accurately, not what we believe, but if you look right at the beginning of the hymnal, if you're new or have forgotten, right before the hymn start, it doesn't say what we believe, it says what we covenant to affirm and promote as member congregations of the Unitarian Universalist Association. The decision was made to use covenant to affirm and promote because some people struggle with the words we believe. I'll undoubtedly have more to say about that next week. The question remains, is there a fourth controversy going on within our denomination, or is it a continuation of that humanist, theist controversy of the early 1900s? I can't remember what General Assembly this was. I think it might have just been the one in Providence the summer before this one, where during one of the business meetings, part of it was having a theist on stage with a humanist, and they had this, no, with an atheist. And those two aren't necessarily the same. And they had this fascinating, brief exchange, civilized exchange of what they each believe. So next week, we'll look at this in greater depth. But right now, I'm interested in knowing how you became a humanist, why you're one, if you count yourself in that number, whether or not you place yourself there on the belief spectrum. I'm interested in what you think about humanism as a place of humility or of hubris. This is a perfect example of how the humanists redefined religion for free-thinking people. Now, you know I have done many services on language, and I really have a hard time with us not being able to use certain words like religion. We can use religion. This is how we define religion. Closing words were written by Theodore Parker in the mid-1800s, again foreshadowing the humanists' redefinition of religion. Parker says, "Be ours a religion which, like sunshine, goes everywhere. Its temple, all space. Its shrine, the good heart. Its creed, all truth. Its ritual, works of love. Its professions of faith, divine living. Go in peace, greet your neighbor, drink coffee, maybe."